WHOI-FM 89.1, and you are listening to Heart of Iowa, a program featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, public speakers, and individuals of note in central Iowa. Today, we are featuring a forum for candidates for the Ames City Council, sponsored by AMIS, whose acronym stands for Amid Iowa Organizing Strategy. It describes itself as a nonprofit community organization in central Iowa made up of 28 diverse members. Our members are churches, synagogues, and advocacy organizations that represent thousands of residents of metropolitan Des Moines and Ames. In the middle of our polarized political times, AMIS brings ordinary people together across the lines that divide and crafts creative solutions to the real issues that impact Central Iowa families. We are nonpartisan, we are local, we are interfaith. We make democracy work. The subject of the forum for tonight is affordable housing, and the AMIS group within Ames has drawn up a list of six questions for the candidates to answer. The forum was held in the large meeting room of the UCC Church on October 14th with approximately 100 AMIS members present. The format was that the moderator read the questions to the candidates, who were identified by having their names printed on large sheets in front of their places. Sometimes the moderator addressed them by their first names, sometimes by their last names, and sometimes not at all. To reduce the confusion, I will insert names where none is given. Also, this is an unusual election since half the candidates speaking are unopposed. I think it is worth hearing what everyone has to say, however, because it helps us understand better how city government operates. But for the voters, the most important are those who are running against each other. So here is the rundown. This is a special election because the city was just redistricted, meaning that all those representing wards had to run again for re-election. Mayor Ann Campbell is unopposed, but she'll be on the ballot, so she participated in the forum. Matthew Goodman, at large, is not affected by the redistricting, so his name will not be on the ballot, and he did not attend the forum. The other at-large seat is vacant and has two candidates, Amber Corrieri and Ann Kinsel. Amber was present for all the questions, but Ann was out of town. A volunteer read a very short summary of her responses, but she asked that all those interested look up Ann's Facebook page, Elect Kinsel 2013. In Ward 1, there is a contest between Justin Dodge and Gloria Betchler. To add to the confusion, Gloria Betchler was unable to be present for the first part of the forum, since she was teaching a class at Iowa State at that time. She did come in time for the later questions and was given time to answer the earlier questions at that time. The Ward 2 candidate, Tim Garten, was unopposed but answered all the questions. The Ward 3 candidate, Peter Arizam, had to leave before the questioning started, but announced he would vote no for the entire slate of questions. He is currently a member of the council serving at large, but decided to run unopposed in the third ward. Ward 4 is the most complicated race of all. Victoria Shapinski is an incumbent for Ward 4 who has served 2 years of her 4-year term, but the redistricting enlarged her ward, so she has to run again. Her opponent is Chris Nelson. I hope this helps a little. Once again, the names are as follows. Ann Campbell, mayor, unopposed. Amber Corrieri and Ann Kinsel, at large. Gloria Betchler and Justin Dodge, Ward 1. Tim Garten, Ward 2, unopposed. Peter Arizam, Ward 3, unopposed. Victoria Shapinski and Chris Nelson, Ward 4. Now for question 1.
Our first question looks at the proposal to have an affordable housing board or commission in the city. As you already know, there are a number of boards and commissions that are already in existence. And the purpose of having a standing board that would be made up of, you know, both sort of people who already work in nonprofits, also developers, other interested community individuals, would be to make sure that as regulations get changed, as, say, a new land use policy gets written, if it does get written, as other issues come up, that affordable housing can be a constant voice in the city. So there is a proposal from the Amos housing team to have an affordable housing border commission. So I'd like to have the candidates' answers. We will start with Justin Dodge. So, Justin, do you favor an affordable housing board or commission in the city? Yes or no?
Thank you, everyone, for coming out. I guess in this context, I would be in favor of a commission. These are volunteers, so there would be no additional expense to the city.
The next answer is from Tim Garten, unopposed candidate from Ward 2.
I would not be in favor of a commission without knowing more details. One of the things that concerns me a little bit is that we're assuming that Ames isn't doing anything now for affordable housing. And in case you don't know, we're doing a lot. Vanessa Baker Latimer does a fantastic job in administering the CDBG funds. She's been doing this for a long time. She's an excellent steward of these funds. And so this is not a tabula rasa thing. And so I think if there's going to be a proposal, there needs to be some more details. I can't agree to something when there's no explanation of how it's going to function, what role it's going to have within the city.
Jonathan Page, minister of UCC, United Church of Christ Congregational, the host congregation, clarifies the concerns of Amos.
Again, we're asking for general support in broad strokes for some sort of border commission. Obviously, any border commission, the details to be worked out in terms of people that are on it and how they get appointed and the specific mandate, that would hopefully be worked out by the city council candidates. So the question really is the general idea of actually having a commission or board something that you'd support? And again, assuming the specifics will be worked out by all y'all. So, again, for the candidates that are left, if you'd like to say certain things that would be important in that border commission, please include the details in the minute you have.
Chris Nelson, Ward 4, speaks next.
It's a qualified yes, but there's a lot of things to look at when you're considering something like this. This is a kind of a big step in the process. I mean, we need to sit down with the current stakeholders. There's city staff, there's CERHA, there's Iowa State, United Way, the asset recipients, and community housing nonprofits, including Habitat for Humanity, Story County Community Housing. They're all involved in this process and should be involved in this process. We need to make sure that the services are provided according to the funding rules, of where the money comes from. But also, most importantly, where does it do the most good? You know, so we need to decide what fits best where. You know, is it fine the way it is? Is it a board within the city? Is it best guided or administered by another nonprofit or group of nonprofits? You know, it needs to be a discussion to figure out the general direction that it needs to head.
Victoria Shapinski, the current representative for Ward 4.
I can think of a lot of things that I think are wrong, but what are the solutions? And here was a list of solutions. Here were some ideas. And to that I say thank you, because you know what? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I mean, I think all these ideas that are in front of us are possible.
I am Amber Corrieri, running for the at-large seat. I would be supportive of an affordable housing commission. If the housing commission was there to support city staff and actually carrying out the duties of affordable housing tasks in the community, then I think it could be very useful. I know that in the CDBG report, staff has cited that it's very difficult to keep up with the current and emerging needs of low-income families. So I would see an affordable housing commission supporting that effort by helping to appropriate CDBG funds, perhaps assisting with the five-year plan, and even helping with some of the community outreach activities like Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week.
Thank you, Amber.
I'm Ann Campbell, running for mayor. Quite honestly, I think on all of these, I would have to say no, but let's have dialogue, and not just dialogue with city council candidates, but dialogue with a broader section of the community. On this one, I'm the one that appoints boards and commissions, and I know the difficulty with that. I would think a task force has a possibility that is, frankly, has more latitude than a board or commission.
And now for our next question.
And for this question, we'll start with the mayor, because we're going to alternate the questions. Yes. And so our second question is, will you support prioritizing low-income housing and job creation in the new Community Development Block Grant five-year plan, which begins this year, and spending the majority of the funds, which average about $550,000 per year to date, on low-income housing and living wage job training initiatives such as Project Iowa, rather than on city infrastructure projects?
That question, I think kind of begs the issue of what the HUD rules are for community development block grants, in that 15% of the CDBG can be used for public service. We do that in using rent, first-time home buyer assistance, rental assistance, utility assistance, and so on. The rules for HUD are that can be done for a three-month period. The infrastructure things are by audit by HUD separate. That serve a different need. We do allot the 15% for the public service. It's not spent to the actual dollar every year, but what is not spent is carried over for the next year for that. So I think if we were to do that, we'd have to look at giving up some of the CDBG public service things that we're doing currently. And I haven't heard the let's give up answer.
Mayor Campbell mentioned some acronyms that need clarification before we proceed with the remainder of this forum. She talked about HUD, that's H-U-D, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, the federal agency through which we receive much of our funding for low-income housing. She also mentioned CDBG, that's Community Development Block Grants. That also is federal money given to cities to be distributed as they see fit. In Ames, that distribution is determined each year through the asset process. That's Analysis of Social Services Evaluation Team. Now we're ready to hear what the candidates have to say about HUD, CDBG, and asset.
It's our understanding that dollars from the other 85% can be used for things like preparing properties for tear down, for repurposing, and that would contribute to the availability of land for affordable housing, perhaps. So that's kind of, I think, what we're looking at. So then, thank you. Candidate Corrieri?
I'm supportive of examining the CDBG process to make sure that we're effectively meeting the needs as it relates to low-income housing. It's obviously a large chunk of money that we're getting on an annual basis, and with limited staff resources, I think it's difficult to determine how to appropriately allot that money and use it wisely so that we can continue to get funding year after year. In terms of the job-specific training and including that in CDBG funds, I would be supportive of having that particular program go through the asset process. I think we've already established that process. It works well, and there's a lot of accountability behind that. So it would encourage those efforts to go that direction.
Victoria Shapinski again.
Well, I think the CDBG funds are just part of the mix. First of all, I want to make sure that everyone knows that there are sessions coming up soon, a housing listening session, so that we can, it's part of the HUD requirement that we understand what the impediments to housing are. And I think that will also help us when we're moving forward with this to understand that part of the picture. But in addition to the CDBG funds, we also have other tools that I'm not sure that we're fully utilizing, like low-income housing grants through the state. I was at a conference recently where we had big discussions on housing. That was part of it. There are methods that you can use TIF in certain districts on residential, and we're doing that in some of the areas around. I'm not saying I understand all the details on how these things work. I just know other communities are doing it and that there are tools. And other communities also have grant writers, and this is part of what they're looking at to make sure that we're aware of all those opportunities that are out there. And that was something that I've suggested for a while and would want to pursue in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Candidate Shapinski. Candidate Nelson, same question.
Thank you. I guess between the three people before me, really been covered fairly well. There is a cap on the money, so if you're using it for job training, Project Iowa type projects, you do need to take it away from somewhere else. And then if you don't spend the money, you have ramifications for that the next year. So the CDBG funding process, I think in Ames works fairly well. That funding is, it comes from HUD. It's based on a federal formula. We don't really have a say in how much we get. That being said, there are other CDBG dollars and home funds, which is another HUD program that Ames isn't eligible for at this point in time, that the state gets that nonprofits and other groups can apply for as well. So there are dollars out there to support some of these other programs that could be applied for by other organizations that would help the whole process along.
Thank you. Candidate Garten.
Okay, so you can write down no for me on this one, and here's why. I served on the board of directors for Habitat for Humanity for 2 terms. I chaired the Asset Commission. So as much as I would like to have some direction and tweak how this money is going to be allocated, there is actually a hearing process and a period of public comment where we invite Ames to come and have a conversation. And I don't think it's appropriate for me as a candidate or eventually serving on the city council to try to steer those funds. This is where we need to hear from the community. So I think this hearing process and period of openness needs to be, that dialogue needs to be there. So I wouldn't be in favor of, as a candidate, directing that money.
Thank you. Candidate Dodge.
All right. So in response to this question, I would support looking at the priorities of those monies. One thing to keep in mind is that if you're allocating more money to one area, you have to give it up in another area, just as Mayor Campbell hit on. So we need to keep, or we need to be aware of that, as well as we need to make sure that we meet the requirements on the federal level for these monies.
Thank you.
And now time for question 3. And this is where we're going to try and start with different people. So again, we'll ask Tim if you'd start on this, on this answering question 3. Again, so question 3 looks specifically at our land use policy. This is something that a lot of effort went into in the 1990s in order to try and lay out sort of smart growth in the city of Ames. And so one of the things that we've examined is that one of the priorities that's not in the land use policy, the last land use policy, is affordability. And one of the issues that does come up with our zoning requirements and the way our building codes are structured is that it does get in the way of affordability. So this is a broad-based question that asks, would you be in favor of changing basic building regulations, including higher density levels, and especially making affordable housing a priority in any new land use policy? So given that introduction, Tim, would you be in favor of reconsidering our land use policy and its accompanying regulations?
You know, I'd be willing to take a look at this. It's a very complicated issue. These rules didn't just materialize overnight. There was a lot of work that went into them. But periodically, we need to be able to step back and ask the question, are these rules still accomplishing the goals that we set them out for? But I actually don't think this land use plan is really what's contributing to the problem. There are a couple of dynamics that have happened here. The university is exploding. And as long as that continues to be the case, that's going to put a tremendous amount of pressure on the available rental housing in Ames. That needs to be an ongoing conversation with Iowa State, looking at ways of providing housing for all these students. The second issue that we faced on Habitat is that there's no land to build on. When we were looking around trying to find a place to build affordable housing, we couldn't buy a lot for less than $80,000 to $100,000. And you just can't do that. So we have broader problems. If we're going to really look at affordable housing, we also have to ask a hard question. Where's the land going to be to build these houses?
Thank you, Tim. Chris?
Thank you. The land use policy plan, like it was stated earlier, was created in 1997. It is periodically updated, revised, and amended. Can we look at the whole thing as an overall picture? Absolutely. I think that there's probably this would be a good time to do that. There's a lot of things happening in Ames right now. Affordable housing is certainly one of the top issues, but there are other land use issues that need to be addressed as well. So I think there's a place in the land use policy plan for affordable housing, but we do need to look at it as a whole city issue. The other thing I guess I'd like to touch on are codes and regulations, and a periodic re-examination of city codes relating to building construction is not a bad thing. And hopefully there's opportunity in there to promote a greater supply. building codes is though the electrical code, the plumbing code, the international building code are really sacrosanct. You can't change those and shouldn't really look at doing that. So we can look at zoning, we can look at density and setback issues, but we need to also make sure that there's no unintended consequences. If we make concessions to a community housing nonprofit, if a homeowner asks for that same issue, you know, we need to just be cognizant of that. Thank you.
Victoria?
Thank you. Well, I think times change and needs change. And so when that happens, you need to revisit land use policy plans and codes. And maybe that's another reason to have a group of people or in, you know, who are specifically focused on knowing where those needs have changed and how they apply to those documents that exist in the city. One of the things that I've talked about a lot in, when this issue has come up is that we need to understand what we have before we talk about, well, at the same time, and we need to do it quickly, we need to understand what we have, and I would like to see us have some sort of housing study so that we know where we have empty lots in the city, where we have tired homes, where we need to look at rezoning so that we can do other types of housing that make more sense so that we can create affordable housing. Most of the information that I've received in the 2 years that I've been on council that tell me about what kind of housing exists has come from realtors. And I'm sure they're very knowledgeable. But I want an independent source. I want something that tells me from a different perspective what we have, and from there we can also talk about what we need.
Amber?
I think just as a general rule of thumb, I'm in favor of reviewing the land use policy plan and our rental and zoning codes on a routine basis, because our community does change and the needs and desires of the people living here change over time. I know if you look at the last updates that were made to the land use policy plan in, I believe, 2011, there was a significant decline in, I think, what a lot of us in this room would consider affordable housing, mobile homes, three and fourplexes and duplexes. And if you talk to landlords or nonprofit housing providers, they will tell you that there are some rental codes that are making it difficult to make money in that business in terms of providing affordable housing. And if you're getting financing from a bank, you have to have an income-producing property. So I think looking at the rental housing codes is just one piece of that. If we're going to look at zoning codes, then we need to have some serious conversations with our neighborhood associations and organizations, because I do think we need some higher density in areas. Mixed-use neighborhoods can be very successful, but it's going to take a lot of partnerships in the community.
Well, having been around when the land use policy plan was put into effect, and remembering the efforts that went into it and the projection of what population in Ames was going to be by the year 2030, we're already there. And so that, if nothing else, tells us that it is time to have a new look. How, and certainly affordable housing is one of those things. However, that being said, I think that we hear their housing need on all levels of housing, first-time home buyers as well as upper-end and affordable housing. So I think the whole housing stock is something that we need to look at. And when we look at affordable housing, the impact of the spike in university enrollment and the pressure that puts on the community indeed has more than just a ripple effect. It has a bulldozer effect on affordable housing for the kind of thing that we're in this room talking about tonight.
I certainly would look at revising the LUPP. Amendments need to be made to any plan as factors change. And so I would be in support of that.
Great. Thank you, Justin.
All right. So the fourth question is, a hard one. Would you support inserting a line item in the city budget to provide direct financial support for low-income housing projects developed by community-based nonprofits?
At this time, I am not supportive of adding a line item to the budget outside of what is already done through the asset process. When we talk about housing projects, I think that those of us in the nonprofit community, and I say us because I work for a nonprofit that provides housing to people with disabilities, I think that we have an obligation to work together to try and form a state-approved housing trust in this community or in this county. There are a lot of funds available at the state level that we are missing out on, And I think that we can be very successful if we are willing to work together. And it's something that I am passionate about, and I would be more than happy to help with the process regardless of whether or not I'm elected.
Candidate Shapinski. Okay. Thank you.
One of the frustrations that I've faced among many when I've been on council is how we spend so much time talking about how some people develop economic development, and that is millions of dollars that we're willing to put towards infrastructure for potential industrial parks and never ask any questions about what that might entail. But when Liz Beck from Heartland comes before us and asks for $6,000, we talk about it for a half an hour because it's so much money. So it depends how you define economic development. And I think economic development is not just about putting in a lot of infrastructure for industry, which we may very well need, but it's also about what your community looks like and that everybody has a good quality of life. And I'm going off here, but that we're making sure that we have amenities, that we don't have people wandering the streets. And amenities is why people come here. And I think people living well is an amenity. And so, yes, I would support that. Am I out of time? Okay, I was also going to say about asset, and I'm just going to jump in with that right now because asset comes up quite a bit, and I think asset is a wonderful structure method that this city came together with when a lot of different groups came before council asking for monies. But it's not the be-all and end-all. And I think sometimes what has happened and what I've seen is that we say, oh, asset's going to take care of that. So we don't have to take care of it. And when this happens, these kinds of things bring council back into the conversation and back into seeing that there are real needs in this community, and we just don't turn it over to somebody else.
So thank you. Thank you. Candidate Nelson.
I think that the city and the asset process is a great process. I think one of the things that if we want to have a dialogue about is, do we want to fund it at a different level? I certainly think we could have a discussion about that. Adding dollars to that is on the table, as far as I'm concerned. There are other funding streams that we could use. Like I mentioned earlier, the nonprofits or community housing can apply for CDBG funds or home funds, which is another HUD funding stream. I think that would be a great place to explore additional funds that we wouldn't necessarily, that we haven't seen in this community. And the housing trust could be a part of that as well.
Candidate Garten.
I'm not going to get any Christmas cards after tonight. So the answer is no, and it's really a bad idea to do this, and here's why. I served in the asset process. I chaired it, and the volunteers who do this kind of work in assets spend hours and hours and hours trying to decide which of these organizations is going to receive funding. So it is not a small matter to just say, well, we're going to set aside the hard work of these asset volunteers. Here's what's going to happen. We add a line item for this. George Belitzos is going to be there the next day saying, I've got five other line items for you. And the next day, there's going to be someone else. And so we're by adding these line items, we're bypassing its asset process.
Thank you. Candidate Dodge.
I would not be in favor of adding a separate line item to the budget. I have not gone through the city's budget process, so I can't speak in reference to that. I believe that the Asset Commission does do a great job, and there is potential for us to increase our funding through that.
Madam Mayor.
I have a difficulty just saying, yes, we'll put a line item in without any parameters around it, which is one of the problems, as I say. I've learned not to get backed in a corner, and I think this is one of those things on this kind of question that can. I would welcome a dialogue with a much broader aspect of the community on the subject as to where funding for affordable housing can come from. But to say, put it in the city budget and this will cure our problems, I have problems with that.
And now moving along to our next question, question number five. And this is one that Chris Nelson will start with. So if we can pass the mic down to him, we can get rolling. As has been mentioned a couple different times, there is funding currently, federal funding that and state funding that the city of Ames does not get, in part of our research showed because organizations within the city don't know how to apply to it or what funds they might even be available to them. Oftentimes, small nonprofits have a very hard time knowing sort of the way federal funding works. The proposal is to dedicate some city staff time, either part-time from a current employee or actually create a position for it, which other communities have done, in order to try and secure more funding from outside the city for our nonprofits. So the question is, would you support the creation of a city staff position, either full or part-time, that would help accomplish these goals? Candidate Nelson.
I support a dialogue to talk about that. I think any effort that brings more dollars into the community in the form of grants or new sources of funding would be an asset. Anything that we can do to help more people it is a great thing. Is that a position that should be a city position? I don't know the answer to that.
Candidate Garten.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because it seems like sort of a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you want to just have someone that can generate lots of money? When I served on the board with Habitat, we scoured the country looking for money. So it's not as if we didn't know how to write for grants. We did that. We obtained a lot of grants. I don't know what Dale does with Story County Community Housing, but I'm certain that there's some effort on his part to write for grants. So I'm not so sure that the main providers of affordable housing lack an understanding of the grant process. So I'd be open to this tentatively, but again, I'd like to see a more fleshed out proposal.
Thank you. And Candidate Dodge.
We have over 500 city staff. There has to be somebody on staff that would have the capacity and availability to pick up some responsibilities like this.
Thank you. And now, Mayor Campbell.
I would also question as to whether or not it is the city that is the best avenue for something like this. I think there's no doubt, having served on enough human service agency boards myself, there's no doubt that it takes some pretty sophisticated expertise. When I look at the expertise of United Way, I'm not sounding like I want to pass the buck, but I'm wondering, but I question whether or not it is a city that would be the best facilitator given what the public role of city is.
Candidate Corrary?
I agree with the mayor. In my role at Mainstream Living, part of my job is I have the responsibility of writing grants and seeking out sources of funding to support our program. So I know how difficult it is to look and try to uncover all of the many, many possibilities that there are for funding, whether it's at a federal, state, or private level. I think we need more dialogue around this issue. The United Way would be a great resource. If you look at, again, I'm going to go back to asset, we do have representatives from the different human service agencies that sit on the asset board, but they don't have a real engaged role as part of the process. So there may be a way to utilize the expertise of individual human service agencies and find ways to work together to capitalize on those strengths and use them for the benefit of other nonprofits.
Thank you. And Candidate Zobinski.
Close enough.
Okay, sorry.
I appreciate that Mayor Campbell used the word sophisticated expertise because much of my professional background was in academic fundraising. And it was a full-time job and probably could have stayed there all evening if I had allowed that to happen. I think it's a great idea, not just for looking at affordable housing and issues of people in need, but there are federal grants that I think we're missing for infrastructure projects. I mean, the intermodal facility is a great example of a federal grant. We wouldn't have done it had there not been that money. I know there are other funds out there, having talked to people in other cities, that perhaps we should be looking at. And those kind of positions are supposed to pay for themselves pretty quickly. If you get a good person, if they're doing their job, whatever that salary is should pay for itself pretty soon. So I would definitely be in support of that. Thank you.
Gloria Batchelor.
Okay, so we're on question five. I would support the creation of a city staff position. I don't know whether I would support it at full time. I think that would remain to be seen what the value in that position would be. But I think that there is value in having someone dedicated to helping nonprofits find funding sources because it takes the pressure off of the city government. If we can find outside sources of funding, if we can engage our private partners in funding the 501c3s, I think that AIMS as a city benefits. And my experience with 501c3s would suggest that we work better on teams. And having a coordinator who could be assisting all of the 501c3s to find funding seems to make sense to me.
Okay, so question six, we're going to begin with Candidate Shapinski, please.
One of the first meetings that I had when I became a council member was with Dr. Burt and Jerry Chase, who maybe you're here, and the conversation was transportation for kids. And I made that motion at the council meeting for funding. We had a long discussion about whether it should be all kids or just kids who were in need, and we did allocate some funding. It was not enough. And since I've had that conversation, I've talked to more people, and at that time, I was agreeing. I thought, you know, maybe just kids in need, but now I'm changing my mind because I think that all kids should ride free. I think that those kids who parents are going to drive them somewhere are still going to drive them somewhere. And if my kid's on the other side of town and I can't pick him up and he can get on a bus because he's not carrying money in his pocket, I'd really like for that to happen. And I'd like him to learn how to ride a bus. I'd like all kids to learn how to ride a bus. I'm very interested in moving forward on a youth master plan in our community. I've been working a little bit. I want to work more with George Belitzos on this project. A major component of making sure that our kids have opportunities is transportation. They need to get to those after-school programs. They need to go to jobs when they're older. They need to get to the store to buy groceries with their parents or wherever it is that they go. But we have a transportation system, and it costs a lot. But I think we could find the dollars to make it even better than it already is.
Thank you. Candidate Nelson, please.
Well, I think it's a great goal to solve the problem of kids' transportation, especially the needs of those outside regular school hours for busing and to do extracurricular activities. But again, SciRide is funded by a number of different organizations. There's the city, there's GSB actually contributes at Iowa State three times as much money as the city of Ames. If we do have a large increase of ridership, that could, and many of the buses are at capacity already on certain routes at certain times of the day. If we need to buy more buses, the federal government's ended capital spending grants for that type of thing at this point in time. So I think we have to look really careful about what the true cost of this could be. Targeting it at kids really in need, I think, is a wonderful thing. And anything that gets them involved in other activities and permits them to, when otherwise they couldn't, I think is a great thing. But I think targeting it is probably the best answer at this point. Thank you.
Candidate Garten, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question. This is actually a good question because it helps us to understand how we as candidates sort of process these issues. So there is a board that gives oversight to this. The city council doesn't just oversee the entire city. We have different boards and commissions that give oversight. And so I'm going to, as a general starting place, I'm going to give deference to the board that's looked at this with some detail. I will tell you, I have a general preference not to provide funding across the board. I think there are some easy mechanisms if we can put the benefits in the hands of the kids who really need it. And so I don't think it would be very difficult to come up with a pass system that really benefits those we're really trying to target. But again, I want to try to focus on what is the board's position and why did they get there? Were they trying to be mean or was there some kind of rationale for this? And I think that's where we should start.
Thank you. Candidate Dodge.
I would be in favor of having a program that allowed the children in need to be able to ride on the bus system. So that way they can go to the programs like the Boys and Girls Club after school and all those other activities. But I'm not in favor of a blanket-wide program.
Thank you. Candidate Boettcher.
I think that if we targeted this just toward children in need, we are setting up a dichotomy that singles out those kids who are identified as needy, and I think that that's not good for the kids. So if we were to do this, I would say it needs to be all kids ride free. Having said that, I don't know enough about the numbers for what the ridership would be. I would support a pilot program for a year if the SciRide board authorize that, because I think if you're going to have affordable housing out in the other neighborhoods besides the urban core, you have to provide transportation that allows kids and their parents to access jobs and other resources. So in theory, I support this, but support in light of the context that's provided.
Thank you. Could we get the microphone down here to Mayor Campbell, please?
I have difficulty subsidizing kids who frankly can afford to, whose families can afford to buy bus passes themselves. The free and reduced lunch program at school does identify kids very easily, and I think can subtly provide a way to give passes. Whether or not this is something that comes funding from city tax dollars or whether it comes through the asset process, I think, again, is one of these things that we need dialogue on rather than just a specific this is the way it's done kind of answer, and I'm certainly open for that kind of dialogue.
Amber Corrieri.
I am, too, open to having more discussions about the Kids Ride Free program. I know that the $30,000 figure was quoted before, and I believe that was what SIRE determined would be the lost fare revenue. But if this becomes very popular, like we would anticipate, then there would be other costs involved, such as additional routes, or extending routes, or perhaps adding staff or purchasing additional buses. If we're going to do a Kids Ride Free program, then I would be supportive of doing it for all kids. I serve on the board of the Boys and Girls Club, and we talk about transportation quite often, especially during the summer months as we're traveling to other areas around the community. But there are kids that go to the club who are low income, there are kids that go to the club who are homeless, and there are kids that go to the club who simply have two parents who work full time. So I would want to make sure that all kids can participate in that program.
Thank you. And if we could get the microphone down to Candidate Betcher. We're going to give Candidate Betcher a minute. We're running behind on our agenda, so we want to. So if you could please summarize your answers to 1 through 4 in about a minute. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, it shouldn't be too hard. Number 1's a little bit difficult. I would say I do not favor establishing an affordable housing board or commission because my experience with the Preservation Commission suggests that there is more power advocating outside of city commissions than through city commissions because commissions are hamstrung by the city government. So I would urge you not to establish a commission. I think that I would support prioritizing low-income housing, but supporting prioritizing does not mean that I am going to look at it as an either-or question. I don't think that we need to abandon the infrastructure projects in favor of low-income housing. I think the plan should be to integrate these and effectively distribute CDBG money among the projects, but that means looking at affordable housing as a key priority. I also would support a thorough reexamination of the land use plan and related zoning and rental codes because I think that we could be exploring using inclusionary zoning for housing, affordable housing, but exploring that does not mean simply applying it blanket, and I think that we need to take everything into consideration as part of the larger plan. We also need to be aware that we might not get what we expect as an answer when we reexamine the plan. And so I think it's a good process. We need to examine that plan, but beware of the possible unintended outcomes of that examination.
Thank you. And the line item for inserting a line item in the city budget.
I don't know enough about the way in which those line items function within the city budget, and I would be hesitant to say at this point that you could hold me accountable for arguing that we should insert a line item. I am not, in theory, opposed to it, but I would want more information before I could make a decision on that.
All right, and now we'll have a two-minute statement, or approximately 2 minutes, from Candidate Kinzel's representative.
This is Susan Bremstecker, representing Candidate Kinzel.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so Anne slightly misunderstood the directions and produced long answers to every single question. So what I'm going to do is just give the very short form. Question one, yes, and supports establishing an affordable housing board. Question two, yes, and supports prioritizing low-income housing and job creation in the new CDBG. Question three, yes, and supports a thorough reexamination of the land use plan. Question four, yes, and supports a line item in the city budget to provide financial support for low-income housing. And question five, oh, there's question six as well. Yes, and supports the creation of a city staff position, which would act as a liaison to nonprofits. And question six, and Anne is a regular Cyride rider, so she really feels passionately about Cyride. Yes, Anne would support a year-round kids ride free program. This is the summation that she wrote. Thank you, Amos, for allowing Susan to read this statement. I only wish I could be in Ames to hear what the other candidates have to say this evening and to address you directly about this important community issue. So far in this campaign season, I have, with a few exceptions, heard more general than substantive expressions on how to tackle the problem of creating a greater range of housing choices to meet Ames' range of incomes. The interesting questions and the white paper you've produced for us allow each of the candidates to offer their thoughts without escaping into platitudes. You now have the opportunity to judge which candidates are able to offer ideas, understand the complexities, and most important of all, show a genuine desire to help move Ames toward greater housing affordability. The creation of a wide range of housing opportunities is a complex but not intractable problem. If we have the will, given the totality of our community resources, both existing and prospective, I believe we can and must pursue policies and opportunities to provide more safe, decent, and affordable housing choices to people who choose to make Ames their home. I'm going to post the long answers on Elect Kinzel 2013, our Facebook page, so if you want to see the detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. And now time for our summary positions. Since we're, again, running slightly behind schedule, we ask if the candidates can keep this to just 1 minute each. Hopefully you can. Since the microphone is next to Mayor Campbell, it's probably easiest to begin with her. So 1 minute summary on these issues that we have talked about tonight. Go for it.
Thank you, Jonathan. Well, and thank you, everybody, for coming and raising what are some very good issues. My, as I said, going into this, my reservation is that it's come with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 yes, no solutions, which I hope tonight has indicated that it's not quite that easy. It's a much more complicated kind of thing. One of the things that I think that Ames has been historically very good about is marriages with a variety of different groups, be they human service agencies, be they Iowa State University, be they Amos, be they the city government, be they United Way. And so I would hope that out of this comes not just a two-way dialogue such as we appear to have tonight, but something that is much more inclusive and recognizing that indeed we do have problems right here in River City, but how are we going to involve everybody in coming up with some solutions that are not one-shot deals, but look at the entire community. So thank you for sponsoring this tonight.
Thank you, Mayor Campbell. And now Amber Corrieri.
Thank you all for being here tonight. It's great to see such a large crowd. You know, the issues that we've discussed tonight are all very important in determining how, as a city, we move forward to address the needs of low and moderate income families in our community. It's something that I am extremely passionate about. It's what I do for a living, and I spend a lot of my volunteer time working on some of these issues. So I appreciate that we've started the discussion, but like the mayor said, I think this is only the beginning in coming up with real effective solutions to these issues that we face. It's going to take more than just those of us in this room to solve the problems ahead of us. And I hope that the nonprofit community will come together and serve as leaders. We'll receive support from the city council, and we'll also bring in other engaged citizens to work together to solve the problems.
Representative Victoria Shapinski.
As I said earlier, and I will repeat, I appreciate all the work that has been put into this and the very solid research paper that was produced. I learned a lot, and I would like to continue doing that. And I'm very sincere about that. I see kids. I see people in our community. I've seen people under bridges. I mean, I know it's there, but I don't see it all. And I'd like to know more. And I would ask that you offer me the opportunity to come to your meetings and anything where you think that I might learn more so that I can be a better representative. So thank you.
Justin Dodge.
Thank you. I'll reiterate what everybody else said about thanking you for the effort that you've put forth in putting together tonight and the research that went into it. It was a learning experience for me to read a lot of this data. By training, I'm an engineer. I like data. So I think that's really kind of what we need to focus on. Amos has definitely earned the right to sit at the table and have these discussions going forward. We do have a problem. We do need to figure out how to solve it. And there are definitely ways that I think we can do that. So, like I said, I appreciate your effort in here, and thank you for tonight.
Tim Garten.
And I'll also echo thanks for coming out tonight. Couple things. One is, please know that our city has taken the issue of affordable housing seriously for many years. If you're leaving tonight with the impression that somehow this is a blank slate, that we're starting from scratch, let me assure you, this could not be further from the truth. And unfortunately, the position paper doesn't even talk about this at all. It was a mystery to me. It's as if we're just now discovering we have an affordable housing issue. And let me assure you, that is not the case. We have an excellent program. We have an excellent administrator in Vanessa Baker Latimer. If you've never met her, I encourage you to get a chance to visit with her. We have a housing problem in Ames, and this is going to be a big surprise here. I'm a real estate lawyer. I'm going to tell you a big piece of information tonight, so get ready to write. We don't have enough houses. And so we have more and more people chasing fewer and fewer houses. And guess what? The price goes up. Now, hopefully that's not a surprise to you, but again, the white paper, the position paper, doesn't really address this at all. It's as if Ames is somehow landlocked. It's as if there's these giant walls surrounding us that we have no place else to build houses. And that's nonsense. We have an opportunity to expand the footprint of Ames, and as we do, that will help immensely. There are some things we can do to tweak some rules to increase the density in some of these neighborhoods. I don't doubt that. But if you think for one moment that that's going to solve this problem, that's naive. We have a problem that's far bigger than that, and it's going to take a city council that in a thoughtful, reasonable, careful manner is going to see Ames grow to expand the housing stock, as Mayor Campbell talked about, for all the different income levels. Thank you very much for coming.
Justin Dodge.
I'll stand so everybody in the back can finally see me. I should have been standing up earlier. Apologize for that. But thank you, everyone, for coming out this evening. This is a tremendous crowd. It certainly shows that this is an important topic and that you all care. And I'd like to thank Amos for taking so much time and organizing this and conducting our interviews earlier, as well as organizing the entire forum. So I appreciate this opportunity to open up everyone's eyes to a lot of the issues that we have. As many of the candidates that are up here spoke earlier, I think that we've just started the dialogue, and that's the most important component. And so I look forward to speaking more on this in the future, and I would certainly be available after this accountability night to speak with any one of you directly. Thank you.
And I guess I have the opportunity to give you a final thank you. I think that one of the issues that I see with affordable housing is that we can't just rely on the community that is in this room advocating for affordable housing. This has to be an issue for the entire community. It has to be an issue for the developers. It has to be an issue for the people in Northridge and Bloomington Heights and everywhere else, because the way affordable housing works in a community is to have it distributed throughout that community. And the more I've read since reading the white paper that so clearly proved the problems that Ames has had for quite some time, as Tim Garten has mentioned, the research that I've done since then suggests that the places where affordable housing strategies work are the places that use a multi-pronged approach, public and private partnerships, perhaps inclusionary zoning in some areas, not just relying on intensifying the core, but also involving developers in putting affordable housing units. And that means not just low-income affordable housing units, but affordable housing units for those people who are making $40,000 and can't afford a $300,000 home. out in the new developments. Ward 1 has the lowest income, by and large, of any ward in the city, according to the recent statistics I've seen. And I don't want to see the entire burden being placed upon our ward. I want to see people having the opportunity to live in whatever comes to the north or whatever comes to the south and feel that they're part of this community. So I support Amos. I am willing to listen. And I just wish I had been able to be here for more of this evening. Thank you for letting me participate late.
You've been listening to KHOI's Heart of Iowa, a program featuring a patchwork quilt of artists, public speakers, and individuals of note in central Iowa. Today, we featured an Amos-sponsored forum on affordable housing for candidates for the Ames City Council election, November 5th.